CliffCentral.com. Yes, Ryan Tucker of RM Tucker Attorneys. Did you always want to be an attorney, Ryan? Did you grow up watching, I don't know, what are all these, Best the Professor, and that before your time, I'm sure, but that's what almost took me into the law career, was watching these guys in these beautiful big libraries, studying late hours in groups, and law's just not like that anymore. In fact, I go into a law firm, I'm looking for these lovely libraries, and I don't see them often because it's all computerized. But
correct.
Did you always want to become an attorney?
Yes.
What do you say? Attorney, lawyer? Which one is more
offensive? Well, it depends. In South Africa, we have a split bar, which means that you can either be an attorney or you can be an advocate.
What's a lawyer?
A lawyer is a general term for both of them.
That's correct. You understand the differentiation there. Okay, did you always want to be?
A patent attorney, actually.
That's what you wanted to be,
yeah.
Always. From when?
From 16, 17. I went to one of those educational psychometric testing type things,
okay.
And three different fields or potential professions were put forward to me, and I chose patent law. And from then I just immersed myself in learning about what it is to be in fact a patent attorney.
Ryan, matter of interest, what were the other two directions?
Sports psychology and physiotherapy.
Wow.
So I didn't really have the grades for physiotherapy, I didn't really see the potential in sports psychology. I think there are very, very few sports psychologists that are really, making it.
That have holiday homes. Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah.
So you didn't fall for the romantic court appearances and all that. That's not at all what appealed to you, the romantic side of law. It was patent. Why patent? I mean, it's a fascinating one. We'll talk about it in a moment. But you've stuck your gun. I mean, is that what you became?
Well, I'm two exams away from becoming a patent attorney.
Okay.
And also, I'm a dual practitioner, so I also do trademarks and copyrights. So generally, intellectual property law is split. At least the practitioners themselves are split, either patent and designs on the one side and trademarks and copyrights on the other side. So I'm a bit of a dual practitioner because the nature of my practice. I'm a single practitioner, solo, and most of the clients that come in can come in with a patent design issue and a trademark and copyright issue.
Is your dream to stay there? Small, focused, specialist? No.
You know, it's a difficult one because I see myself as an entrepreneur in the legal sphere, but also see a lot of startups and entrepreneurs that come to me. So I see the difficulties that SMEs and entrepreneurs and startups face on a financial perspective and other perspectives that maybe Jonathan can also chip in here. You know, I'd like to grow it as much as possible. I've been practicing since 2014, and I have seen a considerable growth in my practice. And, with lawyers, there's a tendency to move around a little bit as well. So, I mean, it really does depend on the prospects that come forward to me.
So here's how it goes. You become the serious advisor for these small businesses who want to patent or... And then eventually you get really close to them, and then you start earning shares in their businesses, and then you actually become an entrepreneur. You know, that's probably where it's going to evolve to. If you have an entrepreneurial mindset, you'll see the opportunities. You see good opportunities. If you're just a lawyer, then they'll come and go, and you'll just advise them. But I can almost see it evolving if you have an entrepreneurial nature. I might be wrong. Jonathan, what do you think? Is he going to stay small?
I think it's the classical debate, you know, how big do you really get? And I say to Ryan, don't move out of your current size unless you're very sure, because I don't think there's a mid-ground. I think you're either small and niche or you're big. I don't think there's that much room in the middle. And I like what he says because it's exactly what I did. So effectively, I did a lot of other business deals outside the labor law compliance field, and because I saw the opportunity and because I was the trusted advisor. In Ryan's field, he's the trusted advisor. These are critically important things. Whether you register them correctly or not determines sometimes the success of the business, and he has an opportunity to really look at opportunities. I think a lot of employees and a lot of people who in professions don't look wider. They need to look wider. And I keep on saying to parents, don't limit your kids ability right in the beginning. Try to keep their minds open as long as possible. So if they end up there, that's fine, but they end up there with a big experience and a big exposure, and they see the opportunities. Because I think good advice coming from a legal perspective is the business aspect of it as well. The law on the one hand, but you've got to marry the business to it, because that gives you a superb picture and a superb solution. If you only look at it just technically, I think you miss part of the puzzle. And I Ryan's going to be fine. He's going to keep up. He's going to keep on that particular path. And I think he's either got to stay very small, low-cost base, very niche, or be big.
Yeah.
See, that's the thing. You're going to be competing against the Norton Roses of life.
Yeah, the Adams and Adams, the Spur and Fishers, where I worked previously.
Yeah. And the way you're going to compete with them is to be brilliant at what you're doing and low cost. So the reason I come to you as a SME, honestly, I'll give you an example just now, perhaps, not the specific idea, but you've got ordinary individuals, a housewife who comes with a brilliant idea. They cannot afford to go to Adams and Adams for advice on how to patent internationally or locally. So you may be tempted to go bigger, but it sounds like the only way to compete against the big brands is to be damn good and small.
Yeah.
But Ryan, we deal with a lot of entrepreneurs and leadership on the whole for years now, but there is really a big difference between the small, well-qualified professional business and the big one. It's a different ballgame altogether. And a lot of quality small guys really lose out when they expand for the sake of expansion. It's a different ballgame altogether. One should be careful of that one. It's a solid profession. A very good friend was a prominent criminal attorney. Brilliant. But he expanded and he lost land into serious difficulties because he couldn't handle the size of the business. It's a different ballgame altogether.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so you must consider that as well in your case. I'm sure you do.
Yeah. Thank you very much for the advice.
All right. So you are now a practicing attorney.
Yes.
But it's very particular to become a patent attorney. So you're saying you're two exams away. How do you specialize to become a patent attorney then?
So basically, first of all, you have to have a technical degree. So you have to have a BSc or a BTech. Or have 15 to 20 years experience in a particular industry. Those are the base requirements.
Oh, so it's not just a law degree that you specialize. Oh, all right, keep going.
So most people you'll see have mechanical engineering, electronic engineering. In my case, I have a genetics and biotechnology degree. And then they go either do masters, PhDs, and they see that maybe the lab rat situation is not really for them.
Mm. And then they take on law.
Yeah, so I'm a little bit of an exception to the rule because I had decided that I was going to become a patent attorney from the age of 16, 17. But most patent attorneys actually initially start out as, you know, people in labs doing experiments, getting exposure to, you know, various types of, you know, doing projects on HIV, on mRNA, and all stuff like that. So then they move into the legal space when they feel that they're not really getting what they want out of life. So for me, what I did is I did my BSc and straight afterwards did my LLB, then did articles.
All the time with the idea to become a patented.
Correct.
I like that,
Even during my articles, I was already starting to write the patent exams. So there are two groups of patent exams. There's group one and group two. So I'd already started doing group one and then continued when I moved to Spur & Fisher to do my group twos, as well as the trademarks exams, because I was placed in the trademarks department there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, so the kind of technical background you have determines, I guess, the kind of patents that will come your way.
Correct. In the small space, I think that from what I see, being in genetics and biotechnology, just having a BSc is not enough. You need to have at least a master's. So for me personally, while I might see a lot of biotechnology type inventions coming through, I think in South Africa, there's a lot more mechanical and electronic type inventions that are actually being...
Here's the stupid side of me. Biotechnology, what is that? Food or?
Genetic modification of anything.
What would I typically patent through you eventually? What would I?
Okay, so let's say, for example, you want to grow maize that lasts longer for people.
Okay.
You would use a vector, a virus vector, to place a gene or several genes into the maize genome, and that would modify the maize and create a so-called better product. But
I can see this has come across your path already. All right. So let's now move away, where Jonathan can come in as well. You want to become a patent attorney, just like a lot of people want to become consultants and this and that. And then they suddenly realize, gee whiz, I actually have to ask for money. I actually have to collect money. I actually have to sell. I actually have to eventually maybe manage some staff. Oh, flip, you know, some of my time is taken up in things that I never really wanted to do. I wanted to be an expert. I wanted to be a lawyer. Or a patent attorney. How has that been for you? I know it's 2-3 years, whatever, but how's the business side going, the finances, the collecting the money, the asking for it?
Look, you raise a very important question, because coming from the big firms and then starting my own practice.
You realize how little you know, actually.
Well, on the practical level, everything is taken care of. At a big firm, you've got marketing that's taken care of. You've got even the filing of the applications taken care of by someone else. All you have to do is deal with the substantive law and obviously the client. Make the client happy, deal with the substantive law. And in my case, what I really try my best to do is also provide a solutions-based approach to law, as opposed to just giving what the law says. A practical approach. What can the client do despite the fact that the law says X, Y, or Z? So, yeah, there is that dichotomy. I mean, I've had to look into marketing and how to go about that, whether to use social media, whether to use traditional methods such as radio or banners and stuff like that. Admin, getting in particular software for lawyers, whereas the however many years, 6 years or five, six years I spent at the big firms, that was taken care of. You didn't have to deal with it.
So, Jonathan, that's it. And those things can tap your energy, eh? Because you want to do what you love, but now you actually have to deal with the stuff that keeps you doing what you love.
Well, I think it's all about selection of staff. So I think one good administrator can do a lot of that for you. I think what I did initially in my business is I always had a very good accountant, both internally for collecting the debt, but externally as well. I married myself to a small grain accounting firm that kept my books and everything in order, because I think that's also the nightmare, because you don't keep the stuff up to date, your tax returns, your tax file, your tax planning. Right from the beginning of our first business, we started to save for our tax. So we didn't want this surprise. We started the discipline of saving every single month for what anticipated tax was and what we had to pay. And I think if you put those disciplines in place, then the rest just falls into place. Then you're allowed more time. But it's when you've got to pay catch-up because you haven't done those basics correctly. That's when it absorbs your time. Or you've got a fine from the receiver of revenue because you haven't paid your VAT on time, haven't returned your, put your returns on in time. So I think, and it's interesting because I was hearing that advert of one of your advertisers just before we came on this show about, you know, supplying a financial manager, but a part-time financial manager. So there are lots of those solutions out there in this gig economy that we're operating, where people can give you that slither of a service for a fraction of the cost. But that's what you need. You need compliance. And you need your books up to date. You need your debtors up to date. Because we also had a saying in all our businesses, you know, it gets beyond 90 days, it gets difficult to collect. You know, you've got to collect it up front. And I think Ryan's in a great position. I think he's in a great position to find wonderful investments. I'm going to take his card. But wonderful investments, wonderful opportunities, because he's working in that space where he has the opportunity of registering something that's novel. And, of course, you can sift the stuff that comes across your desk in terms of what's good and what's bad. But if he keeps his eyes open, he should stay small. Because I think there are only two options for me, and I'm not saying I'm right. But for me, it's either very niche, very small, low cost, or it's big. I think in the middle, you get lost. Because in the middle, you've got to then have the marketing department, the whole departments, in all that cost, and you haven't got the revenue. So I think in this market, in the advice market, it's either very small and niche, and you look at the opportunities, but you select and you don't take any nonsense. The administrator you've employed, you have a decent contract of employment with a decent probation period. You phone me if it's not working the first month, and you sort it out. don't live with the consequences, because it's those good administrators that will determine the success of your business and whether you can grow niche or not.
And now we're in a world, you know, for you to start a small retail company and build it as big as Pick and Pay or ShopRite Checkers, or, you're not going to do that. Okay, the wave has come and gone. The Industrial Revolution is gone. For you to start a small firm, law firm, and try and build it as big as the one next door, I mean, you're going to have to be so unique and crazy and never be at home and do nothing in life. But to get to that size again is probably going to be a hell of a difficult, because there's lots of options and choices in our very complex world. So we've got to be clever, and that's why we're going back to specialist probably. We're small and specialized.
Just to add, my dad is actually a chartered accountant, so fortunately that side of things is taken care of.
Did he advise you to go into law, or no, you decided yourself? So he's not one of those dads that said, I'll pay for your studies if you become a CA.
No. He was very supportive of whatever choice of profession I wanted to get into.
Right. You say you help a lot of SMEs. They come across your desk. What are you picking up? What do you help them with? What are they struggling with? What can you tell us about SMEs? We say in our country that the job challenge or the unemployment challenge lies with SMEs. But in reality, and I think Jonathan hinted towards it in the first half hour, we make it hell of a difficult for SMEs to survive. You know, big corporates take months to pay them. Government take months to pay them. You know, we're just not helping them in reality. But what are you finding?
Well, just in terms of the SME or the entrepreneur himself or herself, I think that they come to the lawyer too late, particularly in my field. I think that, you know, when there's a dispute, as Jonathan deals with, I think that they come only at that stage. I think an entrepreneur who's really savvy will come to an attorney early on and will protect his patents and other intellectual property rights up front, which are huge assets to him in the future. And I think that, you know, some of the more practical business issues can be dealt with a lot easier. But the legal issues, if you mess up, if I can say mess up, up front, they can't be remedied down the line. Mm. For example, if you want to patent an invention, you know, before you actually start selling that product, you have to have filed the application. So I get people who come to me 24 months down the line, or even 12, 15 months down the line, with a product that potentially 12 months ago could have been fantastic. But because of the fact that they've lost novelty, because they've started selling the product already, they can't get a patent. Mm. So those are the sort of things that I see for SMEs and for entrepreneurs and startups.
Yeah. The thing is, when you start, again, the perception is, I really can't afford an attorney.
Yeah,
so,
I agree.
So I don't have 10, 20, 30,000 rand to go and pay Adams and Adams to help me get going, and then I stay away from it.
But I think that's one of the problems in South Africa. So the logic was, you want to be innovative as a country. So is there a fund for innovators and people who have got these radical innovations, whether they're mechanical or biological innovations? Is there a fund that helps them register these patents early on? And I think that's where we're missing the beat. I'm saying, I don't know your field that well, but I'm saying that's what you need to have access to. So that's worthwhile a country investing in, to say, here's a screening test. If these patents meet the first order of the day, there's a fund to help them register them, because again, there are many ways you could get your money back. You could say if they're successful, they've got to pay your royalty back until that's paid back. But we don't seem to have those accesses to those funds that everyone knows about, because if they did, then people would be registering these things far in advance.
Well, there is legislation in place that you know, it's a research and foundation, I forget the actual name of the act itself, but it's a government funded organization that assists particularly people who are coming from universities and those types of environments to partner up with government so that they can get intellectual property protection and be remunerated later on, or gain ownership or whatever it might be later on, such that they can actually be a successful business going forward.
So one can research that a little bit.
Yeah, and I think that there are other organizations as well that might be keen to look into, you know, intellectual property driven businesses. Because, I mean, if you look at the US, Silicon Valley, all those types of high tech, I mean, those are the real businesses of the future, in my opinion. And I think that we should be looking at funding them more and more.
Yeah, I think there are attempts at that.
I don't think there's a one-stop shop where you can actually access as a small business all these things. So there should be, for businesses starting up, there should be like a portal or a government-funded institution where you can go in, and of course you can get the patent funding. All three or four organizations in the country that fund that are available to that entrepreneur. So I think my experience is also on the BE front with corporate social investment and enterprise development, supply development. Lots of people are doing little things all over the place, but there's no coordinated approach. Where if you had a much more coordinated approach, I think you could have a much better result. That's what's missing in South Africa in a lot of these things.
Well, quickly, one or two technical questions. I want to patent something.
Yes.
Do I patent it just in South Africa? Can I then, after that, go international? Or if I think I want to do it international, I should do it international first? I mean, what's your advice?
What's fantastic about the patent system, both locally and overseas, is that you've got the opportunity to assess whether your patent, your invention, is going to be successful in South Africa and abroad. So I'll give you an example. Let's say, for example, you've got an invention. You come to a patent attorney. Today is the 28th of November. You file your provisional application on this day, and that starts a 12-month period, which is extendable by 3 months, within which you can file your complete application. On that day of that complete application filing, you can then file in countries that have subscribed to the Paris Convention. So any country that's prescribed has signed the Paris Convention can then file in. So
after
the
that
USA,
year or, yeah.
Australia, Canada, etc.
So you start locally, but it's provisional.
Provisional.
And then when you get to a year or year and 3 months, you can go to the Paris Convention countries, which is USA and others.
So during that 12 or 15 month period, you can really do some market research and see in South Africa if it's going to be a success. And then what you can do as well, which is a fantastic system that was brought out, is what's called the Patent Cooperation Treaty. And basically many countries in the world subscribe to or sign the Patent Cooperation Treaty. And what that builds in is a delay line of, let's say, 16 additional months or 18 additional months, depending on which country you're in. And it provides an international search report and opinion on novelty. So with that, okay, you're going to pay a lot. It's going to be about 80,000 to 100,000 rand. But you're going to get a very high quality opinion on the novelty of your invention and whether, in fact, it is patentable. Because the problem in South Africa is that we don't have a substantive examination process in place currently. I understand that the DTI is putting in place that, and we should in the next couple of years see substantive examination in South Africa. But currently we just have formal examination. So you could actually file an application for the wheel and get a patent registration for that. So it's very useful. And what that actually does is it put a lot of pressure on the patent attorney to do his research properly or do novelty searches for the client and make sure. So what the PCT does is it provides that international search report and opinion on novelty, which can actually tell you worldwide whether it's worth it to go for it in America, Australia, etc. Okay. And then you can take it from there and enter the national phase in the USA, etc.
Okay, so at the risk of going too technical here before we end off with, you must tell us, not on your side. You must tell us what you've learned as a small business owner finally. But before we get there, so I go and register a patent, or I want to. And it's something that must go to restaurants across the globe, let's say. But there's one restaurant that actually has it. it seems, doing it. But they haven't patented it. I guess then I can...
No. Well, you can certainly use it because it's out there, but you can't get a patent for it.
Because it is already in use somewhere.
Correct. So any disclosure in any means, so whether it's a disclosure by selling it, whether it's a disclosure in a patent application or registration, whether it's at a...
So in a way, I'm safe. If I have done my little thing and I've put up my website and it describes it all, but I haven't patented it, then someone else can't come and do it.
No, the opposite, in fact. If you've disclosed it in any manner or form, you've lost novelty.
Yeah. You've lost novelty.
So you can't get a patent for it.
You can't, but someone else also can't because you've disclosed, you've what's the word you use?
Yeah.
So really, a patent is about sending something out that, it's not like registering, you know, I've got a great business leadership platform, and you jump the gun, you go register leadershipplatform.com on my behalf in the rest of the world, and now I have to pay you to get my domain. It's not like that. You can't do that with patent.
No. Well, we can discuss domain names as well, because if someone takes your domain name, you know, and I understand that there's a first-to-file system in place for domains.
But you have legal
if you have a trademark, let's say, in your name, let's say it's Coca-Cola, and someone goes and says, okay, I'm going to take coca-cola.co.za, there's, you know, the domain name dispute resolution procedures in South Africa which allow you to recuperate or obtain that back from, get so technical, but yeah.
You can see I've got someone in the family who's asking questions. All right, now, as a little business owner who seems to be committed, and you've put your mind to something since you were 16, what have you learned? What is a hard lesson you've now learned in the last few years? Cash flow.
Yeah, I'd say that's a big thing. I battle with bad debts sometimes. Although I'm not necessarily charging astronomical rates like the big four Golden Circle firms here in South Africa, I still struggle to recoup the invoice or half of it. So what I have learned is that take deposits. I know that sounds silly or anything, but I've learned that the hard way. And I work in a different way. I don't just take a deposit and that is, you know, is used for the consultation. What I do is I say, if you give me a deposit, I take that deposit, and if you decide to continue with me, I will use that deposit towards the future legal work that I do. So there's an incentive for the client to actually pay that deposit.
Okay.
And if he walks away, he also knows that that deposit is going to go towards the consultation.
All right. Well, Ryan Tucker of RM Tucker Attorneys. Let's ask Jonathan Goldberg, who obviously is here. He just walks in and you can see he's an attorney in a good way and observant. And he hears the advert here and he hears. So I've met those really serious attorneys who are sharp. Give him some advice, just final advice for this guy starting his career. He's not a novice, but he's small niche. Your final word of advice as someone who's been around for 30 years or so?
Well, I think cash is king. I think you must continue to take as much deposits as you can. I think it can always be flexible. I'm a great – I think there's going to be – the conglomerates are going to break up. I'm not talking about legal firms. I'm talking about generally. I think this big mass conglomerate and the costs associated with that, I think we're going to have a phase in the world of getting smaller before we get bigger. That's my own belief. And I think it's in that specialization. And I think what he's doing well, he's saying, that's where I'm good at, and I'm going to remain in that space. What we need to do for Ryan is get his name out there and support him in regard to opportunities, because it's those startups that need patent domain registrations and good advice in that regard. So I just think remain flexible and look for the opportunity, Ryan, because the opportunities are there. You can't take them all, but take some opportunities. Take some rides with your clients. But always stop doing work for free, because people never appreciate work for free. Get a decent fee, do decent work, because then you're incentivized to do the actual work and to do it properly. But I think stay as you are, specialize, stay flexible, and look for the opportunities. And cash is king.
I never go on holiday because you you can't hand over the work.
Always go on holiday.
Yeah, there's always pros and cons for small and big, eh? But you must just love what you do and keep it up, Ryan.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Thank you so much. Everyone. And Jonathan Goldberg for USB Ed, who's spent the time with us here for our business masterclass. Next up is our youth leadership platform, YLP, in association with Student Brands. Young entrepreneurs behind Retro 21, a youth lifestyle company aiming to provide a platform on which local youth-owned brands as well as upcoming musicians can come together. Stay tuned. CliffCentral.com.